Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Yeah, old Kris Kringle himself getting ready to step up to the microphone. Doug Oster, DougOster.com, the organic garden, has some great things lined up, but we're going to start off with a great thing. If you are the 10th caller at 412-922-1020, you win an amazing gift certificate. That incredible place that Sorgel's out in Wexford. And if you have anything on your mind you'd like to talk to us, you know the drill, 866-391-1020. So here he is, front and center, Doug Oster, DougOster.com.
Good morning. I've got a great guest coming up. Allie Gundlach is a seed technician for Tree Pittsburgh, and I interviewed her all about how they save seeds and start them at the nursery for Tree Pittsburgh, and we had a lot of fun. I think you're really going to like it. I am the perpetual procrastinating gardener. I can't believe I'm still working in the garden in December, but I put everything off. I did get the last of my shrubs and perennials planted when we had a break in the weather. I was actually planting like 100 bulbs the day that it started to snow. I had a window. And I was like, uh-oh, it's starting to snow and it was warm. And I was like, I got to get these bulbs in. The shrub that I planted is one I talk about a lot. It's called Caria with a K, K-E-R-R-I-A. And the one that I grow, it's a monster. It's 8 foot by 8 foot and has these really pretty orange yellow flowers, and the deer don't like it, and it grows in the shade. Well, this one was a gift from Dr. Mark Miller, who works at the Pittsburgh Botanic Garden. Oh, by the way, Pittsburgh Botanic Garden has this thing called Dazzling Nights. It is amazing. You hike through like all these trails, and they have all this music playing and lights. It's the coolest thing. Anyway, Mark gave me this. I was looking for this shrub. It's a variety of Caria that has variegated foliage, which I love. So when it's not blooming, it'll have this beautiful green and white foliage. Pretty cool. Inside, paper whites are blooming right now, and oh, I love them, but my wife just puts up with them. Paper whites have a fragrance where you either love it or you hate it, and I love it. To me, it smells like spring. To my wife, it smells more like the cat might have had an accident in the house. So I did post something on Facebook about paper whites, and people were chiming in on, again, love and hate. I posted something at DougOster.com about Tomato Fest, which is a place that I get a lot of my tomato seeds. They have rare and discounted seeds. And if you remember last year, I threw away most of my plans for planting my favorite tomatoes. And I went with 10 of their discontinued varieties. And this is fun to spend some time looking through these different tomatoes, and I listed a couple of them here. And again, all the links and everything are at DougOster.com. And you don't write this stuff down or anything. Or if you just getting a coffee and you're here, what was that tomato? Just go onto the website. And it'll you can find it. So, alas, these are all organic heirloom tomato seeds. So you can save the seeds from it when you're done at the end of the season. Alaskan Fancy is the first one. I've got them alphabetically here. It's the earliest plum-shaped tomatoes that they grow, and great for short, cooler growing seasons, 2-ounce tomatoes. If you wanted something early that was a little bit different, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for something unique. Here's one called Belinalive, B-E-L-I-Y-N-I-N-A-L-I-V, short, indeterminate Russian variety that produces very 2-inch tomatoes that are sweet and tangy. This one I've grown before, Genelise Golden Girl. This thing won first prize at like the Chicago Fair back in the 20s, like 3 years in a row, 8 to 10 inch golden orange, richly flavored tomatoes, wonderful salad tomato. One just called Large Red, which says highly favored for 100 years, 1 to 2 pound tomatoes, old fashioned acidic tang. And then there's one, this one I've also grown before because this one has a personal connection and a Pittsburgh connection. It's called Acres Plum, and when I saw it in the catalog or online last year, I was like, this is from Carl Aker, who used to call into the show all the time. Carl has since passed, and I actually went out to his garden a couple times. He's a good guy, but he got a tomato fest. He sent him these seeds, and they loved them. It's a giant plum tomato with excellent taste. So the description is a family heirloom from Carl Aker of Pennsylvania, and he lived out east. These tomato seeds produce a healthy, long-lasting, regular-leaf tomato plant that yields abundant crops of 6 to 8 ounce brilliant red jumbo plum-shaped tomatoes. Tomatoes have thick, meaty walls with excellent taste, a fantastic multi-purpose tomato suitable for juice, cooking, salads. Several gardening friends consider this tomato variety one of their top choices to include in their tomato garden each year. And I grew it last year, and I loved it. And again, it has this Pittsburgh connection. I love tomatoes with a Pittsburgh connection. And that's another thing that I have on the website, this thing I call the Pittsburgh Preservation Project. And it's three different tomatoes. And all you have to do is send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, and next month I'll start sending the seeds out. Three different varieties there. The Limbaugh Legacy Potato Top, which I always talk about, which is the big, meaty, thin-skinned pink heirloom with great taste. Then 3945 is the one that was found on the battlefield of World War II. And then a new one, Dr. Jim Snow. It's another big, tasty heirloom. But if you'd like to try them, just send me a self-addressed stamped envelope. All the information's on the web. And then one more tomato story. I've been growing this one called Heart of Italy, and this is the one that my daughter found at Han Nursery and just saw the name and said, oh, Mom would love that. And we started growing it, and all my gardening friends, they love it too. It's an ox heart variety, meaning, you know, it's a shape of a bull's heart, very meaty, you know, again, thin-skinned, and again, with this great flavor. Well, you'd think if it's one of my favorites that I would save the seeds and have them in a special place, but I could not find them. I've got a lot of tomato seeds, but I should have had them in a special place. Well, a gardening friend, Diane, I had sent out a message saying, if anybody had saved any of those Heart of Italy seeds, please. And so she had started some, so she gave me some plants. We met up. Actually, the first time we met, she was looking for the plants. And so this was 3 or 4 years ago, I had grown out some. We met in a parking lot in the North Hills, and I gave her the plants, and she just loved the tomato. So she gave me some plants this year and grew them out. We were talking back and forth and all about the tomato, and she sent me a picture of her last tomatoes, the ones that she ripened inside, and she made this beautiful salad. What's the salad called? Caprese salad, yeah, with the mozzarella, the tomato, and basil. And she had used, which I forgot about, this technique I always talk about with basil, freezing it in ice cube trays with olive oil. And she had used that in the salad. She said it was wonderful. And so these garden friends, that's one of the fun things about what we do is sharing with each other. And so also at the website, I put up my ultimate guide to growing tomatoes from seed. It's too early to start those tomatoes from seed. We don't start those. March is the very earliest. But this is the time to do the planning, to think about what you're going to plant. And as I said, that whole list from Tomato Fest, and there's lots of other sources. And your local nurseries will have seeds out soon. Actually, probably have them out already. I saw one nursery had a couple different racks out. And so the planning part is fun. Those paper whites and amaryllis are also the things that I love for the winter. I used to not really, of course, I don't have the break. I used to really not look forward to the break in gardening, but I have been this winter. It's been such an easy winter so far, but I enjoy that break, but I guess I'm not getting a break because I'm still planting. I have stuff in the greenhouse that's looking pretty good. You know, even though we got really, really cold there, I've got lettuce in there, arugula. I've got that stuff out in the garden too. Got some kale out there, turnips, white turnips, and also some more arugula, other things like that out there that even during that cold spell, they looked pretty bad, but when things warm up and they're under a little bit of protection, they look good. Okay, another pitch for my upcoming trip to England. It's selling out pretty quick here. We got about 8 seats left. We're going to May, and there's nothing like England and London for gardening. The Chelsea Flower Show is one of the most amazing things. This is my, I think, fourth time that I've been there. And we get to go on a direct flight. As I said, it's getting close to selling out. There's a discount until January 15th. But Chelsea Flower Show, all these gardens, Hampton Court Palace, Garden Wisley. Well, that's one of my absolute favorites. Seville Gardens. And then 2 hours south to the Sissinghurst Castle and Gardens. Plus, we get to see the city, Tower of London, and Windsor Castle, and Westminster Abbey, all that kind of stuff. And I love London, and it's just a wonderful place to visit. All that stuff's at the website, DougOster.com, that I talked about here at the top.
All right, who's coming up next?
Coming up next is our friend from Tree Pittsburgh, Abby Gunlock, and all about saving seeds from trees. We had a lot of fun.
Stay with us.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Imagine uncovering the secrets that others missed. A hidden clue, a silent witness, a twist that changes everything. I'm Carter Roy, host of Murder True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Join me every Tuesday as we dive into a famous solved or unsolved murder case. Follow and listen to Murder True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This morning, I'd like to welcome Allie Gundlach. She is a seed technician for Tree Pittsburgh. And Allie, what does that mean? What does a seed technician do?
So everything to do with seeds. So it's sort of which comes first, the chicken or the egg. So I go out and do all the seed collection throughout the year, which typically starts in June. Cottonwood, serviceberry, things like that, that are starting to seed in June and then really ramps up through the fall. During the winter, I do all the planning and getting everything set for all the propagation in the spring. So I do all of the seed sowing and working with volunteers in the spring.
Why are you collecting these seeds? And is it all out in the wild?
Sure. Yes. For the majority, it's out in the wild. The reason why we grow from seed is for first genetic diversity. You know, we're not growing from cuttings. We're not growing clonally. We want to have a nice mix just so we have the most resilient stock possible. Whenever I am collecting in the wild, I'm trying to collect from the oldest trees possible, the largest ones I find in the forest. We also collect from places like the cemetery, which is a great partner for us. Also, you know, in a lot of the city parks that even though they're maintained, they have these huge heritage trees there. We've started to just recently expand just with new seed transfer guidelines, collecting a little bit more southern seed. So we've been mixing that into our seed lot starting this year to try to create that.
Meaning how far south?
Still within our ecoregion, but just outside of like the Allegheny County, Pittsburgh area. I went down into the very tip of West Virginia that's still in our ecoregion into southern Ohio a little bit to do some seed collection. But it wouldn't be more than 10% of what we're inserting into our seed stock. But
how do you know where to go?
So a lot of it's permit applications.
Oh.
So we have great partners all around the city, the Pittsburgh Parks, different land trusts, Hollow Oak, Allegheny Land Trust, the county parks. We have permits for state game land, state parks. So I just usually communicate with the different rangers or whoever needs to know that I'm going to be there. And I'll do scouting in the spring. That's another aspect of seed technician, is just watching for things that are actually flowering, going to produce for the year.
And since you've been doing it so long, you know when the timing is right.
Correct. I mean, it can be a two-week variation depending on weather patterns before or after when I expect something to be ready. So it's really being out in the field and paying attention.
And does every seed need something different to sprout and to store?
So it's so interesting because nature on one hand does its job and the forest regenerates itself in a way. But what we're always looking for is to have the highest germ rate possible. So whenever we're treating seeds differently, we do treat a lot of seeds differently, and we'll stratify them for different times and things like that. But that's just the what we've proven to give us the best germination rate.
It's a science.
It is. Yeah, it absolutely is. In an art.
Yeah, well, talk about that. The science is, they've been saving seeds and treating them, whether it's stratification or whatever it needs.
Yeah.
What's the art part?
Yes, the art part is really, I think, a bit of what I mentioned before is the paying attention, is the consistently watching. And then the art part is while you're cleaning seeds, while you're processing, looking at them, seeing what the textures are like, making notes of what things look like as you're working with them. And then in the spring, as we watch how things grow, how that influences what happens in our seed lot, what's happening in our nursery stock.
So it's possible you could go out to collect seeds, but it's not right. You get there and it's like, I'm 2 weeks early.
Yes.
I'll be back. And you'll know by looking at it, like, okay, well, this will be ready in a week or two.
Yes, roughly. And, you know, if you look at the weather in the next week or two, and if we're coming out of a drought and it's suddenly there's a deluge of rain, maybe things will be ripening faster. So note to self, come back here next week and check on things. You know, there could be different. That's another part of the art form, where you're also considering the weather and how those patterns kind of affect when seeds are ready.
Well, it's been so dry. How has that affected your seed collecting?
Yeah, this year has been pretty strange. A lot of things were on average about 2 weeks early from last year. So things were ready earlier. And then also, for example, a lot of the nuts were not filled. Their embryo did not fully develop because their tree needs that resources just to stay alive rather than putting it into a seed. So there was a lot of that. A lot of the nut species, it just wasn't a good year for them this year. So it's very like drought dependency. So if they're not going to, they're going to keep that energy to stay alive rather than putting it out into their seeds.
Is this all native stuff that you're doing?
For the most part. For the most part, there's a few species that we grow that are non-native, but that are not invasive and do really well in city conditions. Things like Dawn Redwoods, Coosa Dogwoods, things like that. So
what do I do with my Dawn Redwood seeds? How do I do it?
Dawn, that's a good question because we're still working on that one. It's a bit of a head scratcher.
It's a little, so I don't. All I know is that I love the tree.
Yes.
My favorite tree on my property.
Yes.
And that's a little, what I refer to as a tiny pine cone. I'm sure that's not what it is. But
yes.
Where are the seeds in there?
Yeah, so what I like to do with the Dawn Redwoods, the best time you'll see, when you look at the cone, there's little crevices, and when they just start to turn from green to brown in those crevices, collect them, pop them in a paper bag, set them on your shelf for a few days, and you'll see when you open them that those pores have opened up, and it almost looks like little oats inside of it. All these little oats. I just shake the bag real hard to get the oats to release. I mean, that's probably not the technical term either,
sure,
but just what I'm going to call them.
That's what they look like.
And it's taking those oats and putting them into stratification. once they're...
And if it's hit the ground, is it too late?
Not necessarily. They disperse really easily once they're open and hit the ground. So if you don't want to spend the time picking up the individual seeds off the ground, usually the cones have released their seed by then.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And are there things that you're always looking for to find more of that might be hard to find?
Sure. We're always looking for certain species. I'm always trying to keep my eyes open. And what's great is we also have a really solid volunteer base, so they're always letting me know when they see stuff or even bringing in and donating seed, things like that. Things like American plum, tricky to find around here. Pin cherry, very tricky to find around here. Things we're constantly keeping our eyes open, chinkapin oaks. We love, those are so beautiful, hard to find, So we always have kind of an ongoing list through the season of stuff we're looking for.
When does your seed collection stop?
Oof. Well, it goes pretty much, if you think, the latest seeds I collect go into the winter. So sycamores are usually late February, March, same with Kentucky coffee trees. And that's when it really tapers off. The big taper is mid-October, after all of the oaks are done, after the hickories are done, Aeschylus, buckeyes are done. That's usually the signal that things are really slowing down. So very few among the winter, but ends in March.
All right, Allie, we're going to take a little bit of a break now. When we come back, more about seed saving in Tree Pittsburgh. We're back with my guest, Allie Gundlach. She is a seed technician for Tree Pittsburgh. And Allie, let's talk a little bit about those seeds once they're saved.
Then we get our seeds, mm-hmm. and in the case of nuts, mm-hmm. you have to crack it open sometimes to get the seed, and then the seed goes into some type of storage, right?
Yes.
Always.
Yes. So the way we handle our nuts, acorns, and buckeyes, they're recalcitrant seeds, so if we don't have those sown immediately, they'll die. So it's really a matter of either removing caps, cracking open those hickories, soaking the walnuts so we can remove the shells, things like that. We sow those ones immediately in the fall and put them into our acorn boxes, which are a protected area in our nursery. But those are the only ones that we sow immediately. Everything else goes through the process of stratification in our refrigerators.
So are these outdoor ones, uh-huh. is it technically stratification if it's planted outside like that? Is it a natural stratification?
It's like a natural stratification. Okay. Yeah, they definitely need that cold period. So yeah, there is a stratification there.
Now, black walnuts, did you ever get that stuff on your hands?
Oh my God, it stains forever.
Yeah, I know, because I had a young mother call me and say her kids got into black walnuts before school started.
Oh,
and she said,
no.
How do you get it off? I said, I don't think you do. I think it wears off. So how do you get it off?
That's a really good question. You know what? I have all the crevices in my hands will be black for about a week. But if you figure out how to do it, please let me know, because I haven't cracked the code.
No, I ask anybody that when I talk about black walnuts in general. So we get our seeds stored somehow,
yes.
most of them.
Yes.
And then there's the sowing process.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How do you know how much to plant? And tell me a little bit about, does each one need something different to germinate? Or is it pretty similar?
Well, it's where we get the numbers from. I actually, my director, Megan, she comes to me with the numbers of what we're projected to need for the next year. So I'll take that number, look at our germination rate, and use that to calculate how much I should put in stratification, plus 20% in case there's some mortality issues, after the sowing process. So that's how we get that number, that idea.
So tell me about the number. Are we talking hundreds, thousands, tens? What is it?
Typically in the hundreds.
Okay.
Every once in a while, we'll go up a little bit past 1,000. But because we have such a small growing space, we only have 2 acres and it's all containerized, we grow about 20,000 2-gallon containerized trees and shrubs a year. But I'll start probably 50,000 in the spring.
Mm. And like any other gardener, is it just as exciting when everything starts sprouting?
Oh, I never get over it. That's why I've always loved horticulture and worked in horticulture, it's so exciting in the spring. And honestly, whenever it comes to the sowing, it's not that different than creating, a growing schedule that you have at home, with vegetable seeds. Okay, I sow this 1/4 inch deep and I can fit so many within these rows within our trays. So it's just sort of doing that math. That's the winter part. I'm doing a lot of math, a lot of planning for all that seed sowing and getting things ready.
And since it's nature, What about when things don't sprout as much as you'd like?
I know. That happens every year, you know?
There's no way around it.
Yeah, there's no way around it. And we just take that and I mean, we can't compensate in any way, really. So we just take that and move forward with it. The next year, we may try to sow a little more, sow a little less. That's also why we have our seed bank, because that natural periodic cycle for a lot of different trees and shrubs is they don't produce seed every year. You know, not regularly. So that's why we created the seed bank, where on a really good year, I'll collect a bunch of different stuff, and then we can have it from year to year. So there's no, you know, absolute crop failure from year to year if we don't have the seed.
So how is the seed bank? How are the seeds saved or stored?
Sure. Yeah, I'll make sure all the seeds are cleaned. We dry them to a certain humidity, and then we set them. We have an extra refrigerator just for that. Just to keep all of our stored dried seeds. They keep them in alphabetical order, have a little spreadsheet of when I remove any, when I put more in there, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, and it's a great opportunity to partner with people. You know, it's like if somebody, you know, needs a certain type of seed, if there's a natural disaster, if anything, you know, anything like that, we're really well stocked to be able to help wherever we can.
And then once the seeds sprout from the tree, mm-hmm. you might not get rid of all of them, right?
Right.
And so they get to another year here, another couple years here, or do you find a home for them? How long can they stay here?
So it's species dependent. Some things grow almost like weeds where they're ready within the year. You know, I mean, we can transplant a box elder and it'll be ready within the year, you know, especially for restoration plantings. Those early successional species that really take off quick, those we can turn over in a year. Other things like our oaks, we may transplant them. We don't transplant them until like two springs later.
You talked about a few trees that I'm not familiar with. Give mm-hmm. me a couple more that are off the beaten path that are cool trees that people should grow more.
Oh, there's so many good ones. Like hop hornbeams, I feel like are a little underappreciated. Oh my gosh, the little, it almost looks like hops flowers mm-hmm. hanging off of them. Those are just spectacular.
Now, does that one need water? Because I see it on the lakeshore.
So it likes really well-drained areas.
Oh, okay.
It's honestly an understory tree, typically in hardwood forests. So it can do drier spots and be A-okay, which is great.
All right, keep going.
Yes. I also think another underappreciated is American hazelnut. You know, talk about a great succulent shrub that not only like benefits critters, but it's super tasty. You know, they're so fun to watch those clusters form. Very underappreciated. Really fun to collect too. It's hard. I like a lot of trees and shrubs, obviously. That's why I work here, but.
Does anything make it home to your own little landscape?
Oh my gosh, yes. I'm lucky that I have almost an acre of property, but it's all, you know, an old mine site. So it's really early successional species. So I've been trying to turn it into a little arboretum of my own. So I get to take home some misfits, you know, ones that the leader broke, you know, something happened. And it'll be really cool in about 20 years.
So tell me a little bit about why this job's right for you.
Oh, this job's perfect for me. It's a blend of my past work history, but also my passions. So conservation and horticulture. And this is the job where these two things meet. You know, it's like every year I get to look at the crop growing, and it's like, this is the future forest of Western Pennsylvania, of Pittsburgh. You know what I mean? And growing up here, it's really meaningful work, meaningful conservation work. And I also love the process of growing. I love being a horticulturist and nurturing plants.
All right, Allie, thanks very much for joining me this morning. For more information about Tree Pittsburgh, just go to DougOster.com.
All right, really short here, but that was a nice interview.
Thank you so much. I enjoy talking to her, and I've been waiting like 5 years to do that interview about them saving all the seeds from around the area. I really think that is so cool, and they're planting all these great native trees and a few that are not non-native. They're doing good work.
All right, let's take a call here. Anybody else wants to jump in? We only have a couple of minutes in this segment, but hurry up, 866-391-1020. Here's Dan in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Dan.
Morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
Fantastic. Hey, Doug, I just had a question about growing microgreens. Mm-hmm. Would I be able to grow some basil?
Oh, definitely. Basil is one of the favorite things for microgreens. So, You know, Dan, I'm sure you know how to do this already. You're a relatively experienced gardener. What city, what part of Cleveland do you live in? I don't remember.
We're in Willoughby Hills.
Willoughby, that's what I thought, out there, up there at 90, right?
Yeah.
So this is one of the easiest things you can do. And I just want to go over for the listeners how I do it. And so I just take some planting mix. I get it moist, like I would be starting seeds. And then it could be in any kind of pot you want. You don't need anything special, lighting or anything. Just put it on the windowsill. And the different things that we're growing as microgreens, they just get like little seedlings. And that's when we eat them. And so basil would be a good thing. I do radishes, sunflowers, beans, anything like kale and broccoli, things like that. Peas are really good. People like pea shoots. And I keep a couple of those going on the windowsill. And the one of the big things about it, first, it's a thing that us gardeners can do in the winter. But more than that, microgreens are highly nutritious, very sweet and tender. And you get that freshness that we love as gardeners. So, Dan, how long have you been gardening now, and how has it been going?
Oh, it's been going fantastic. I've been going for, I think, about 5 years now we've had the house.
Mm-hmm. And what are the things that you're growing? Are you doing a vegetable garden, flower garden?
Yeah, a little bit of both. With all of your information, Doug, I try a little bit of everything. With the basil, my daughter, she kept the basil plant going over the summer. Unfortunately, she gave it a little bit too much water, and so now we need to start it over.
That happens. And actually, basil is one of the things, as a microgreen, anything will grow. But our regular Genovese basil as a windowsill plant, it can be problematic. It's just not enough light in Cleveland or Pittsburgh to really make it do its thing, but it can be done. You know, people do it with peppers, people do it with basil, they keep them going on the windowsill. And that's funny that you say that too, because overwatering is one of the things that is definitely a problem for indoor plants. Always tell people, you know, use your fingers. Push your fingers down into that dirt. If it's moist, leave it alone. If it's dry, it's time for water. That's the way to do it. So how was your season? Did you guys have a drought in Cleveland like we did here in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, we had 2 5-week periods where we didn't get a whole lot of rain. Luckily, I've got a couple of rain barrels out there, so I was using a lot of the water from there.
Oh, that sounds good. And what were the crops that did best for you in the vegetable garden?
Just more of my herbs this year. I was able to transplant some peppermint and some spearmint that really took off. My elderberries were great, the strawberries, the blackberries.
You're going to have to watch that mint, because that mint can be an invasive, can take over. I always tell the story that I inherited a garden that was in the shape of a Union Jack, which is the English flag, and there was one rose in there, which I transplanted out of there, and then just a bunch of different mints. I put an above-ground pool on that garden, and I still have mint. So watch the mint.
I'll tell you, I love it. I made some tea out of it this summer.
Mm-hmm.
Or one of my sisters gave me some raspberries last year. I was still picking raspberries up until we had the snow a couple weeks ago.
That's awesome. We got just about a minute left. What was it that started you gardening? Just getting the house, like your first house?
Yeah, getting the house. You know, listening to you over the years, reading all your articles, watching your videos. That was so inspiring. I know my grandfather, he used to grow sweet corn up in Butler.
Wow.
And people would come all over, you know, and stop to see Bernie, you know, to see if he had any sweet corn.
Oh, that's so cool. All right, Dan. Hey, I really appreciate your call. Great to talk to you, and I'll see you online. We talk to each other online here and there. Time to go. Remember, organic gardeners, you make our world brighter and safer with each seed you sow and every garden you grow.
All right, there he goes, Doug Oster, DougOster.com. Coming up, it's all about those holiday parties on the Coons Cooking Hour. So if you have any favorites from that entree to appetizer or dessert, you better get on the line and call us, because before the hour is up, someone's going to win a $25 gift certificate courtesy of Coons Market, a Pittsburgh and a holiday tradition.